Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. Drink beer, talk football. If you're new to the show, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, and follow on social media at PGF Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing and McKenzieBrewing.com. Week two of our team preview episodes starts today because I want to get you guys ready for the upcoming season. I have a bunch of great guests coming up these next several weeks. All these guests cover different NFL teams. So we're going to try to preview as many teams as possible. And on today's episode, we're going to talk New York Jets football. I had an opportunity to sit down and interview Harrison Glazer, who covers them, and I think it made for a great in-depth interview, breaking down New York's offseason and looking ahead to this fall. I'm always looking for ways to make you, the listener, a smarter and more informed football fan with in-depth coverage of all things NFL and college football, and I think these guests throughout the summer are going to do just that, so I hope you enjoy. Excited to be joined by Harrison Glazer, the founder and owner of Take Flight Media, which covers the New York Jets. Harrison, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, man, I'm excited to be here. I appreciate you having me on. I'm glad I get to join you on this Wednesday evening and talk about the Jets. It's been a lot of good stuff going on. Things are finally looking really, really great. I'm excited. I'm ready to talk about them.
What a difference a year can make. This Jets offseason has definitely been exciting, and I'm excited to break it down here with you. And one of the changes we've seen from New York is with new offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur bringing in a new offensive system for the Jets. Now, reports that I've read have said that second-year wide receiver Denzel Mims has been working with the second-team offense this offseason. So is Mims still the clear-cut outside wide receiver, or will he be taking on a new role for the Jets this year?
It's actually funny that you asked me, because I was actually one of the people that kind of broke that story in a way, because I do exclusives with DJ Bieniemy, one of the Jet writers on my company's site. And I asked him about a bunch of players, and that was one of the big things he had said and stuck out to me. And then I heard Connor Yu saying the same thing, and I asked him about it, and he actually responded to me. Like, it wasn't like a tweet he put out. He responded to me on, you know, the tweet I said to him, where I was curious if that was actually the case, because a lot of people had said that since Mimsa came back, Cole was still running with the ones. Now, the pads aren't on yet. You know, Mims has – he was one of Joe Douglas's second-round picks last year. I mean, this kid had the potential to be a first-round pick. I've been saying all year that, heck, he still has the potential to become a wide receiver one. But what's interesting about Mims is the way DJ and the way Connor described him to me was almost identical, and they worked for two different companies. It was interesting that they both had this very similar analysis, that in this new Robert Saleh, Mike LaFleur system, in the passing game, it's very important to have precision and good route running. That's a very important quality that you want from your wide receivers. And they view Denzel Mims, as Connor called him, a quote-unquote linear player, and that he doesn't have as, you know, deep a root tree as Davis has, or even Elijah Moore. Like, Elijah Moore's a rookie, and he might have the best route running on the whole team already, which is amazing. But that is what apparently is looked for, specifically in this kind of an offense, which you have in Corey Davis, and you kind of have in Keelan Cole. Now, what Connor had said, and this blew my mind, because this was breaking news. I'd never heard this before. And he kind of just mentioned it, you know, in a response. He'd said that the Jets have been actively trying to acquire Keelan Cole for the last 2 years. Because my thought process was, how can Mims not be the guy? I mean, that's Joe Douglas's guy. He drafted him in the second round. He's got all this potential. But Joe Douglas has only been the GM of the Jets for 2 years, which means since he's been our GM, he's been actively trying to acquire Keelan Cole. But the Jaguars knew what they had in him, and they weren't going to let him go. So Cole, you could really classify as one of Douglas's guys as well. So it really is an interesting situation, because I don't think they're giving up on Mims. I mean, again, he's an excellent deep threat, a good red zone threat, because he's a big physical receiver. But from what I've been hearing is that Cole has a deeper root tree and that he would be more of a wide receiver too and thrive better in this new Mike LaFleur system. And that since Mims has come back and been healthy, he's consistently worked with the twos while Cole has consistently worked with the ones. So that's going to be once camp opens and pads go on, that's going to be, there's a lot of interesting battles to monitor. That's going to be a really interesting one to monitor.
Yeah, it certainly is, because I'm with you. I think the kid has a ton of potential. We still haven't seen his best football yet by any means, but it'll be really fascinating to see what they do. Now that the wide receiver group has gotten a little more crowded, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Denzel Mims, certainly. But I want to touch on another pass catcher, another Jets player that has reportedly lost first-team reps as well this offseason is tight end Chris Herndon. This kind of surprised me when I read this. What do you expect his role will be this season?
What's funny is I'm not surprised. And I would take it a step further. Forget him, you know, being the top tight end. I'd go as far to actually say he could be cut. Chris Herndon could wind up being a surprise cut before the preseason or even the regular season begins. And the reason to think about it is he had a good rookie year. He was suspended the next year and didn't play as well, and he was hurt. When he did play, he looked okay, but he hasn't flashed. He hasn't looked like a tight end one by any means. This is his contract year. When you have a player in their contract year, you always expect big things. Last year, Corey Davis had his best year in a contract year because this is their time to make the money. Well, in camp, if as you've heard from the tight end reports, it's been him, Tyler Croft, and Ryan Griffin consistently running with the ones. Yet Herndon is dropping everything. Herndon's dropping almost half the balls that go to him, to the point where he is now running with the twos, which is why I believe Ryan Griffin and Tyler Croft are, even though they're not great options, I mean, I would definitely prefer a better tight end option, it looks like the two of them are going to be the top tight ends for the Jets this year, not Chris Herndon. And what's interesting then is you look at a guy like Kenny Yabo. Kenny Yabo was an undrafted guy out of Ole Miss. He was the best wide receiver on that team or receiving option on that team as a tight end next to Elijah Moore last year. So I don't know if I'd feel confident that he could pass through waivers because he could have been a fifth to seventh round pick. So being afraid of him passing through waivers and Griffin and Croft, you know, looking better. Yeah, Herndon, you know, forget having a top year. He's got to be worried about even just making this roster.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's great insight because I was unaware of all the dropped balls. And that is a quick way to find the bench or even find your way off of a roster, certainly. So that makes a little more sense now that you've said that. I guess I was surprised initially because with LaFleur's offense, it's usually very tight end centric. And so I was a little surprised to hear a veteran guy like him being pushed aside. But if they've got better options and he's not playing well, that's the life of an NFL player. So that's certainly great insight by you. And I wanted to touch on the Jets offseason here as a whole. They've had one of the best off seasons in the NFL. They upgraded at wide receiver and defensive end in free agency this offseason by signing Corey Davis, the wide receiver from the Titans, who you just mentioned is coming off his best NFL season, and Carl Lawson, the defensive end from the Bengals, who had 64 quarterback pressures last year. What do you expect from these two guys? And talk about this free agent group of players that the Jets have signed.
It all comes back to one person, and it comes back to the man who's making all these decisions and putting all the right positions in place and signing the right people, turning the organization around, and that's Joe Douglas. Everything Douglas has done, I even had a podcast episode where I just talked about why I already feel he's a great GM. This man does everything right, makes all the right decisions. He's built this team. Like you said, I think it was Bleacher Report, I believe, that said the Jets had the best free agency of any team. But you bring up those free agency signings, it starts with Corey Davis and Carl Lawson. And ironically, you brought him in on the same night. Everyone was, you know, joking, Joe Douglas hasn't done anything yet. Jet fans were so mad. They were flipping their computers. They were flipping their tables because they missed out on all the big free agents. They're like, he doesn't know what he's doing. Then nighttime falls around and they're like, Joe Douglas is the king. Joe Douglas knows what he's doing because he brings in Corey Davis and Carl Lawson. And man, those two signings, unbelievable. Corey Davis, if people don't know, he was the fifth pick in 2017. He was the first wide receiver taken. And the reasoning was he was insane in college. Like he was like a, it was like a Madden video game for him in college. This dude holds still holds the most receiving yards in FBS history with about 5,000, I think it's like 5,200 and change, and is second in FBS history in touchdowns, receiving touchdowns, with like 50-something. He was unbelievable. And he didn't, you know, first couple of years, he was only okay. He did shine and flash and have potential, but last year he had one of his best years, only 26, close to 1,000 yards. Man, he could be that wide receiver one. He believes he is. There was an interview with him where he said he was training to be that wide receiver one. I really believe he can be. And Carl Lawson, there's not enough that can be said about Carl Lawson. Carl Lawson, the caliber of Carl Lawson, the Jets haven't had an edge rusher of that caliber since John Abraham. That's how far you have to go back. They haven't had an edge rusher of that kind of quality. You mentioned it. I tweeted that kind of stuff out. 64 quarterback hits. That means he hit the quarterback four times a game. Sorry, pressured the quarterback four times a game. He had 32 QB hits, which he hit the quarterback twice every game. The dude was tied with TJ Watt with 26 quarterback knockdowns. One of the better edge rushers in the league with 15 sacks, tied with him. In the last two seasons alone, the guy has hit the quarterback 54 times. In his career, in just 4 years, he's hit the quarterback over 80 times. That's as many times as every Jets player hit the quarterback last year, period. Lawson did that himself in 4 years. Like, the sacks haven't been there, but I thoroughly believe it's because I look at a guy like Shaq Barrett, for example. Shaq Barrett, when he was with the Denver Broncos, as everyone remembers, his sack numbers weren't that high. But what's interesting was he was always rated high. PFF was giving him like 79.9, 80.1 when the dude had like two sacks, which seems crazy. But it's because he was doing everything right. The production just wasn't there. And I believe it's the same with Carl Lawson. And like we saw with Shaq Barrett, second he got to his new team, the light went on, 19 and a half sacks. So I don't know if it's going to be that high, but I do believe Carl Lawson is set. This guy is an elite edge rusher. And the Jets haven't had an elite edge rusher since John Abraham, which is like 20 years.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting signing for sure. And anytime you share a stat with TJ Watt, who's maybe the best pass rusher in their entire league, it shows you're doing something right. And you hit on some great numbers there. He's been a really under the radar player as far as nationally. I don't think he gets the love that he deserves as a pass rusher. He's definitely in that group of great pass rushers, and the Jets got a big time player with him. It'll be exciting to see what he does. But I wanted to touch on another free agent that I'm really intrigued by, Harrison, and that's Lamarcus Joyner, who the Jets signed a one-year deal worth $3 million after playing for the Raiders the past 2 years as a slot cornerback. But I keep reading that the Jets plan to move him to safety, where he had his best football playing at safety when he was with the Rams. How big of a role could he play for this new-look Jets defense?
Oh man, Lamarcus Joyner is going to be huge. He's going to be a major point in this defense. And again, the credit just going to Joe Douglas making some of these signings that go under the radar. I mean, getting into him, but also just pointing out guys like Gerard Davis, who's been shining in camp. Guys like, you know, Sheldon Rankins, guys that were first round picks that had a ton of potential that he signed for chump change. He gave them prove it deals to see what they do this year. And coming back to Lamarcus Joyner, you'd mentioned he'd been played at slot corner for a while. And if you look at his PFF numbers at slot corner, they're like 50-something, 60-something. They're not good. But he played safety for a good amount of time. And when he played safety in the NFL, just the snaps he played safety, according to PFF, his rating was a 90. His rating jumps to a 90 at free safety alone, if you just evaluate him from that position. So my big question was, I hope the Jets are going to use him in safety. I mean, I trust Joe Douglas at this point. I've never trusted the process before. I trust it now with him. I figure, you know, hopefully they're going to use him right. Olbrich confirmed it. The defensive coordinator on Flight 2021, the docuseries that the Jets did, Jeff Olbrich confirmed that Lamarcus Joyner will be exclusively playing safety, which is very exciting. Very exciting. Because again, we talk about that 90 PFF rating. You put him with Marcus May, that could be the tandem that guys like Adams and May were supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And to get him on such a team-friendly deal, it's such a low-risk, high-reward move. I thought it was a really savvy move by Joe Douglas, and I'm very intrigued to see him back at safety. I think it's going to work out well for the Jets. Now, as we know, the Jets moved on from quarterback Sam Darnold, and they drafted quarterback Zach Wilson this year with the second overall pick. Now, we do a ton of in-depth draft coverage on this podcast, and after analyzing his game, I absolutely love his arm talent. but he can be reckless at times. His anticipation is inconsistent, and he did beat up on some bad teams. He was a little underwhelming versus some of the better teams. There's a wide range of opinions on him, Harrison, from the next Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes to the next bust. So what's your opinion?
Zach Wilson has been my guy for a while. He's been my guy going back to before I really can honestly remember him being many people's guy. Because for Jet fans, it was a very, very long ride this year. Not going to get into, you know, the whole quarterback roller coaster, because it was a rough one. But, you know, starting with Sam Darnold, who I was supporting, I never got on the Trevor train. I never did. I mean, I was pointing things out how Deshaun Watson was just as good as him. I point out things like with Justin Fields being a system quarterback, because what does that mean? He's in an excellent system that is designed for success, led by great coaches at the college level that always win. Well, Clemson, by definition, is one of those too. Not saying the quarterback's bad, but the system definitely helps. That's kind of like the argument I made for Zach Wilson. I fell for this guy the second I started watching him, and it happened when the Jets were like out of the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. Everyone kind of like rubber banded back to Sam Darnold. Like, just jump back to him. And at that point, I was starting to question it because I looked, you know, the numbers are bad. The numbers are bad. The decision-making is bad. He was my quarterback, and I supported him because he was young. He needed a team around him. But it wasn't impressive what he was doing. I didn't understand that rubber band. It didn't make sense to me. If you moved on to Trevor, why are you going back to the guy you moved on from? I didn't get it. So my answer was, let's look at other guys. And I instantly fell in love with Zach Wilson. I just instantly fell in love for the things that I look for. I call them NFL translatable traits. I call them cerebral traits. I think some people call them intangible, but I call it cerebral, the mental aspect of the game, which football is more mental than it is physical, which anyone will tell you that, especially at the quarterback position. He just checked every box. I saw him for the first time and I was just amazed at what I saw. I just loved everything and I kept watching and he just kept impressing me. I was blown away by so many things, but the thing that blew me away the most, ironically, and I guess because I talk about this when I did my QB eval, I eval quarterbacks differently. I don't look at, like, I hear, you know, the top guys, the things they talk about. That's not what I look for. Like, for example, the big thing is arm strength. You always hear about arm strength. And when I did my QB eval podcast, the joke I made was, if you like arm strength, then you're going to like almost anybody. Like, most of these guys have excellent arms, and that's not what differentiates them. Like, the joke I made was, you see on Twitter, like, somebody posts a video of, like, you know, one of the college prospects. He drops back in a clean pocket. He makes a really excellent deep throw. The receiver does 90% of the work, and they praise the quarterback for having an amazing arm, for making a great deep throw. But James Morgan, the guy the Jets took in the fourth round, he has a hell of a deep ball. If you love deep balls, watch him play at FIU. That kid throws a great one. That wasn't what I look at. Like, when I looked at Zach Wilson, the first thing I noticed that, again, I just don't feel like it's talked about enough, his pocket awareness. His pocket awareness is, like, incredible. It's next level. Like, the more I watched it, the more I realized when he was breaking within nanoseconds of defenders breaking through their alignment, understanding gaps and alignments with certain players and his offensive personnel versus the defensive personnel, I realized he had innate pocket presence. And there's only one other quarterback that I remember having pocket presence of this kind of innate level. And that's why I didn't get, again, the Patrick Mahomes comparison. Everyone compared to Mahomes because he had a great arm, this cannon arm. But with what I looked at, I saw Russell Wilson. That's what I saw. I saw that innate pocket presence to be able to just make these decisions that teams like Seattle have just decided to never put an offensive line around Russell Wilson because he's so amazing that he doesn't seem to need it. But that's a mistake, but that's what they do because it's an innate pocket presence. And that's what I saw in Zach Wilson. And he checks all those other boxes while he has great arm strength. But even more than that great arm strength, one thing I said about him, he throws receivers open. And what I mean by that is it's a double-faceted answer because people had asked me about that in the past, what I meant by that. By throwing receivers open, obviously he throws good, clean footballs into good windows, but it's more than that. He knows what to put on the ball. And people pointed that out in camp and noticed that. They said that in camp, he can put touch on the ball. He can put certain velocity. He controls his throws very, very well and makes excellent decisions. That's what I also loved about him. I felt like he made excellent decisions in pressure situations. And people talked about him not being pressured that much. he was pressured a lot more than people think. The problem was he was just excellent at analyzing that pressure and getting out of the way of the pocket or doing something. In fact, his designated rollouts, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's insanity. On designated rollouts, he had something like 20 touchdowns and like no interceptions with like a 78% completion rating, like something crazy. I fell for him immediately. Back in December, I was saying, back when Fields was the guy, everyone loved Fields. I was saying back in the beginning of December, this is the next best quarterback to Trevor Lawrence. Like, this is the guy. Like, he's the one I wanted. This is the quarterback I believed in. This is one of the quarterbacks I've been the most hyped for. Like, I think this guy has the most potential for the Jets since Chad Pennington, honestly. And from camp, he's been amazing. He's been unbelievably amazing in camp. Like, all the beat writers have literally pointed out how great he looks. Even you said, this kid doesn't look good for a rookie. He just looks good. Like, period. He just looks good.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting time for New York fans, and I'm super intrigued by him. When I evaluate him, I can see some of the flaws people point out, but the arm talent is undeniable, and it's not just the strength or the touch like you alluded to. It's the off-platform throws. It's the rollout throws. It's the manipulating the arm angle. He can do a lot of things that are special, and it'll be just awesome to see what he can do in year one with the Jets and going forward. But one key advantage that Wilson will have that Darnold didn't have is an emerging O-line with Mekhi Becton and now Elijah Vera Tucker as back-to-back first-round picks, and add free agent Morgan Moses, add a new O-line coach, John Benton, who is in his 4 years at San Francisco, the Niners produced the fourth most rushing yards in the league. How good can this young O-line be next season?
It's exciting, man. I was hesitant about the right side of the line before Moses was signed. I mean, I loved the left side of the line. Like, that line is going to be insane, that left side. Mekhi Becton should have been an all-pro last year. One of the reasons I love Douglas is Mekhi was my guy. I felt like he was the best offensive lineman in that offensive lineman class. I liked him more than Willis and Wirfs and Andrew Thomas, and Douglas felt the same way. And Mekhi has been excellent. That kid is gigantic. Gigantic, but he's unbelievably athletic, as fast as guys 100 pounds lighter than him, basically. And he's very quick. He's got excellent footwork, hand positioning for his strength. He's a physical force that puts people down, but he's also got amazing technique. He should have been a Pro Bowler last year. And then AVT, the new left guard, man, AVT's numbers speak for themselves. AVT was the best pass blocking and run blocking guard in the whole Pac-12, basically the last 2 years. He had a 92.8 pass blocking grade last year. Him being drafted, I felt like the Jets had to trade up to the top 15 to get him, which is what they did. But then Joe Douglas turned around and said he was a steal. Douglas said he was a top 10 talent. And you know what? I think Joe was right. Because AVT, the Jets taking him, it's the same you have to think about, like when the Colts took Quinnen Nelson, like when Washington took Brandon Scherff. Like, this is the quality of offensive linemen we're talking about here. Like, the two of them have potential to be elite, and they're on the same side of that line. As we mentioned, the Jets have signed Morgan Moses, who is an outstanding signing. I really wanted this guy. The last 7 years he's played, he's been one of the best right tackles in the NFL. But last year, he had his best year with a run blocking grade of 86. This dude is an excellent run blocker, but also a good pass blocker as well. He had an 80.6, I believe, for his overall grade last year, and he's a veteran. So the three of them right there, that's three studs on a five-person offensive line. And you mentioned it before. Offensive line is the key. You got to protect that quarterback. I mean, just because Russell Wilson's able to make it without an offensive line and Zach Wilson has that same kind of pocket presence, that's not how you build a team. The quarterback needs a line, and Joe Douglas has given him that. We mentioned those first two guys. The left side, the right side was questionable until Morgan came in. Now, the issue is going to be center and guard. Now, a lot of people talked about Connor McGovern and kept saying Connor McGovern was a top 10 center for the second half of the year. Well, that's true. But he was also one of the worst centers for the first half of the year. And he was, I think he allowed 6 sacks last year, which is not what you want from your center in any way, shape, or form. So people feel he's going to do better in the zone blocking scheme, which he should be able to do. He should do better with better play around him, which is especially going to happen with these two better tackles and AVT on the left side of him. But we need to see better play from him, because last year he was very inconsistent. And then at right guard, that's going to be interesting. Now that Moses was signed, George Fant could potentially be the right guard, but he's not really played right guard before. The favorite for the position seems to be Greg Van Roten, which would be not a bad pick, because Van Roten, when he first signed with the Jets, he was average with the Panthers for many years. And when, you know, you're the Jets and you have one of the worst offensive lines for the last couple of years, average doesn't sound too bad. Average sounds pretty damn good. So I was excited about average. He wasn't that good last year, but he's an excellent technician. He's got great footwork, great hands. If he can play average, that can be a top line. I mean, Becton and Moses together are a top five offensive tackle combination. So with AVT, with the potential of him, if McGovern and the right guard play well, this could be a top 10 to 15 offensive line.
Yeah, I'm certainly with you. I think they've got a ton of young talent and are really starting to build something there. It'll be exciting to see, and I'm sure with a new young quarterback, building that O-line is going to be so crucial, like you touched on. It makes me think about Andrew Luck. You know, one of the great prospects we've seen in this league in the last 20 years, and he's out of the league way before he should have been because the Colts didn't address offensive line for so long, and it caused him to leave because of injuries, and it's tragic, and I'd hate to see that for any young quarterback. And I think the Jets are doing it the right way, building this O-line and getting the trenches built up. I think it's been fantastic what they've done as far as that goes. Now, for the second year in a row, it appears the Jets have really crushed the NFL draft. We talked about it briefly, but I want to get a little more in depth here. Elijah Vera Tucker was the best guard in this draft, the best interior lineman in this draft. I was sky high on him when doing our player evaluations on this podcast. Elijah Moore feels like an absolute steal in the second round. And Michael Carter, the running back from UNC, should be a great value pick in the fourth. Talk about this draft class and what kind of impact can they have this season?
How great it is to finally have a great GM that knows what he's doing from everything, from the trades he's made, to the acquisitions he's made, to the decisions, to the signings, to the way he doesn't show his hand, to the way he interviews and, you know, doesn't, you know, says very specific, deliberate things. Like I say, his first draft was very good. It was an excellent first draft. This draft definitely has the potential to be one of the greatest Jets drafts ever. I definitely think that. And again, with the potential of Zach Wilson, that's the quarterback of the future right there with that first pick. And we talked about with the second pick, trading up to get not just the best offensive guard in the draft, you could probably even argue one of the best offensive linemen in the draft, period. We're talking somebody at the level of Quinn and Nelson. Like, that's the potential and talent level we're talking about. Now, with the next pick, he gets Elijah Moore, a guy that should have been a first rounder. Man, Elijah Moore is a potential superstar. Like, I didn't want a wide receiver that high, but when they went Elijah Moore, I was like, okay, I can dig it. I get that. Because Elijah Moore was the best slot wide receiver, period, in the last 2 years. This guy's been amazing. For 25 red zone targets, he's never dropped one. He caught every single one of those 25 red zone targets. Even as a rookie, as I mentioned before, best route runner on the team already as a rookie. He's looked unbelievable in camp. Everybody is saying that Elijah Moore looks unbelievable, that Elijah Moore looks everything as advertised, even though the pads haven't gone on yet. So he has potential superstar written all over him, really. And then Michael Carter, I thought this dude was massively slept on the whole draft process. I don't know if I mentioned it before. I do my own draft eval for my site, Take Flight Media. I do draft analysis. I love Michael Carter. In fact, Michael Carter had just about the same amount of carries as Javonte Williams, yet he had more yards and a higher yard per carry. Michael Carter, I felt, was massively slept on. I was like, everyone's looking at Javonte Williams and no one knows who Michael Carter is. This dude has a rare thing that you don't see anymore in NFL running backs, and that's patience. He actually waits, anticipates the line, decides to make his cut. He's a patient running back that you don't see anymore. You really don't. And for his size, only about 200 pounds, he's a pretty tough dude. He's been a good pass catcher, and also in camp, he's really excelled. So that kid, I felt like Javonte could have gone as high as the second round, maybe even third, somehow went in the fourth. And there's so much other value. Another example would be a guy like Hamza Nasruddin. Hamza Nasruddin, by almost everybody, was projected to be a second to third round pick. And that's because in two seasons, this dude had 192 tackles. 192, basically almost 100 a season. He was pretty amazing. He tore his AC. He got hurt, and that's why, you know, he fell as far as he did. But he was projected to be a second and third round pick. The Jets got him in the sixth round, which is crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. I thought they had such an impressive draft. We do our draft grades episodes where we break down every team. I gave them an A. I thought it was one of the best classes in the entire NFL, and I'm really excited about what they did. And the Michael Carter pick, I loved their first couple picks, but the Michael Carter pick, I'm with you. I think it was a huge slept-on player. I actually had him graded as a late second, early third type of player. To get him in the fourth is just outstanding value and another really savvy move by Joe Douglas. He just continues to make. I think the Jets, for the first time in a while, are really headed in the right direction. And so we've had a lot of fun here breaking down the Jets, talking about all these new additions, new players, new things going on, and a lot of buzz for this team. So last question here, Harrison, what would you say is the floor and what is the ceiling for the New York Jets in 2021?
Oh, man, that's an exciting question. And I've talked about this a lot on Weapons Hot, another show I do with the co-host there. I think the best way to describe it is the word volatile. That's the best way to describe it, because right now they have a rookie head coach, they have a rookie offensive coordinator, and a rookie quarterback. I mean, I think the potential is unbelievable. Like, I believe so much in Robert Saleh. This is the most hyped I've been for a coach since Rex Ryan. The kind of potential for a guy, the guy needs a get back guy. Like, he says all the right things. He's energized. He's motivated. Players came here, like Davis and Lawson, literally said they came here because of Robert Saleh to play with him. So you got Mike LaFleur. It's a new offense. I think Zach Wilson's got a ton of potential. Man, it's a big floor and ceiling is the way to look at it, because it's very, I think the word is a volatile situation. I mean, if it goes amazingly well, which I think it really could, I mean, I think Saleh's the right guy. I think Mike LaFleur is the right offensive coordinator. I really like what he does. I love Zach Wilson. I love the talent on this team. Man, it could potentially be a 9-11 win team and potentially even scoot into the wild card of the playoffs. But at the same time, it is, again, a lot of rookies in their respective places, like the head coach, the coordinator, the quarterback. So I figure, you know what? Even if they only win like 6-8 games, which is kind of more realistic is what I feel, what I'm looking for is the team to be going in the right direction, for Zach Wilson to be progressing, to be looking better, to be making better decisions and looking crisper as time goes on, for the team to be gelling more together, as long as, because, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. It's the best way to put it. Like, Rome wasn't built in a day. I mean, it takes baby steps. I think this team is super talented, but it may take, you know, a couple more pieces. So as long as things are moving in the right direction, they're, you know, not looking bad, they're not looking like they're getting worse, then honestly, I'm fine with more like 6-8, which is where I think the range more likely is. But man, I don't want to shortchange it. A lot of people I've spoken to, like some of my co-hosts, are so hyped. They think this team could be a 10-11 plus win team. And you know what? It definitely could be. With the talent on this team, the fact that, and another underappreciated aspect, no one's seen this team before. There's no film to go watch. You can't go watch film on Robert Saleh's team with Mike LaFleur as the offensive coordinator and Zach Wilson at the quarterback. That doesn't exist. So teams are going to have to find film from all over and try and synthesize it together. But that's going to give the Jets a unique position in the beginning. And that's why I'm really hoping we can go like 3-0 and 4-0. I'm hoping we can come out with teams not knowing what we're going to be and just come out strong with throwing different things at them, different formations, four wide receiver sets, deeper cornerback position because we can. I'm excited. I really think it could be good. But again, I tamper my expectations to, as long as things look like they're trending in the right direction, then I'm okay with, you know, 6-8.
Harrison, I absolutely love that take. I think it's honest but optimistic, and I think it's spot on. And you've been spot on today. It's been a blast breaking down the Jets with you. Once again, he's Harrison Glazer, the founder and owner of Take Flight Media. Harrison, why don't you tell PGF Nation where they can find you and your content?
Definitely. So we, like Brad pointed out, the name of the company is Take Flight Media. You can find us on our website where we write and report about the Jets at takeflightmedia.org. We have us, you can find us on Twitter where I put, you know, takes and stuff on the Jets as well as stats, videos. That's at NY Jets TF Media. And I also have a podcast I do on Monday nights where I've even actually, it's been very exciting, I've been able to get some NFL players on. So I actually had John Franklin Myers on about 2 weeks ago, and I had Bryce Huff on last week. So if you want to check us out, that's on Monday nights. It's on YouTube. It's called the Take Flight Spit and Fire Podcast.
Awesome stuff. PGF Nation, be sure to go check it out. I know we've got a lot of Jets fans, a lot of fans in New York that listen to this show, and I'm sure they're going to be excited to check out more from you. But thank you so much, Harrison, for coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
My pleasure, man. Thank you for having me.
All right. That's going to do it for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. But like I said earlier, we have a lot of team preview episodes coming up with a lot of great guests. So be sure to subscribe so you don't miss out, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.